Let's start what we have come into the room to do. Right on. Here goes. One, two, three.
Welcome to WCBN FM Ann Arbor. This is It's Hot in Here, the show bringing you environmental news, views, and grooves from SNRE students, faculty, and staff, as well as the many practitioners in Southeast Michigan and beyond. My name is Sam Molnar. I'll be your host for today with special guest hosts Jason Coleman and Mugabe Bikenya. We're going to start out this show with a little poem from Mugabe, who's going to be talking to us today about African environmentalism and what does it mean to be an environmentalist in the 21st century. Welcome, Mugabe.
Thank you, Sam. I'm going to start us off with a little poem that I wrote called Sisimuka, which is a Swahili word for rise up. So, Mugabe, do you just wear normal clothes in public to fit in, but when you go back home, dance around a fire encased in original sin? Our consciousness needs to rise up. Mugabe, since you're from Africa, have you ever pet a lion? I'm so glad that you escaped Uganda. I heard people are dying. Child soldiers on the rampage, bullets and bombs flying. Wait a second. Your people use bullets and bombs? I thought they used sticks and spears, marching onwards on the road to Zion. Were you a child soldier? Have you ever killed somebody while crying? Stop with the ignorant questions, please. Our knowledge needs to rise up. Mugatu, Mugali, it's Mugabe. Pronounce my damn name right, or at least try. Stop saying whatever every time you stumble across something you can't pronounce, like you can't do what I have to do, since my culture does not rule over you. Cultural hegemony is not cool. So why won't you? Rise up. Rise up, all of you. This is not a critique on those outside the continent. For within the continent, there are those who are incontinent. Those who consciously choose to forget our own past. What will come of the day when I can ask what our traditional religions are without being put on blast? Labeled satanic, a devil worshipper, for curiosity into the gods of my own ancestors, my forefathers looked down, shaking their heads, thinking to themselves, how can they demonize their own culture to accept that of foreign vultures as their own? It is not right. Cutting yourself off from your unborn, internally torn from your own culture, why can't we rise up? And by we, I mean humanity, the seduction of inadequacy, ignorance blinds we with no Stevie Wonder enlightenment. And yet, hope glistens with sparkling clarity. For a continent formerly known as dark, we sure do have a lot of bright, a lot of light, minds, eyes, thighs, and smiles. We never stopped smiling. A six-day visit to a rural African village completely changes a woman's Facebook profile picture. Still smiling. For we have so much history, no scratch that, his and her story, technology, philosophy, ideology, so we continue to rise up. From the ancient cities of Timbuktu to Kigali's pristine streets, we are the cradle of humanity, and our potential is our actuality, as the great Mugabe once said, be who you want to be, not who you are. Rise up. Thank you.
Beautiful. Can you just tell us a little bit about where that poem came from?
That poem was something I wrote for I went to the University of Kansas for undergrad, and we had this annual show, which is a celebration of African culture through music, dance, poetry, and drama. And I wrote that, the name of the show is Sisimuka, and I wrote that poem for that show. It was born out of a point of frustration because I came to this country 4 years ago for my undergrad, and I faced a lot of ignorance and a lot of stupid questions. A lot of people asking me, hey, like, so how do you get packages in Africa? How do you, like, have you ever pet a lion? Like, have you ever seen, like, a zebra in your backyard? And a lot of just general ignorance like that. And so this poem came out of frustration due to the ignorant questions that I'd faced, and also due to the my concerns with African environmentalism and African religious practices, which will be further discussed in this show.
So there's a link between environmentalism in Africa and religious and spiritual practices. Do you want to talk about that a little bit and lead us into one of the interviews we're about to do?
Yeah, sure. So The way that I see things, and the research project that I'm working on currently, is looking at the link between religious practices and the environment on the African continent, because pre-colonialism, when Africans were worshipping their traditional religions, religion, philosophy, ideologies, cultural practices, and everyday things were all linked and they're all intertwined. But with the advent of Christianity and Islam spreading throughout the African continent, and Christianity and Islam with their monotheistic religions tend to have separations between those. Like, you can go to church on a Sunday, but that doesn't stop you from being a communist or a capitalist or a liberal or a conservative. Those are two completely distinct things. But with the separation of the different aspects of life, which has been a result of changing times due to the introduction of new religions, I believe that that has led to a change in the perceptions of the African environment and a more monotheistic view of African environments and African environmentalisms, which will be further discussed and elaborated on by Dr. Peter, who is a former teacher of mine.
All right, so let's cue that up. We have an interview with Dr. Peter Ukpoko.
Ukpokodu.
Ukpokodu.
Mm-hmm. As being an obstacle. Oh, sorry. Yeah. An obstacle to true faith, to true belief in that one God. Remember, maybe you might go back and read it if you read Things Fall Apart, for example. Mm-hmm. Remember with the coming of the missionaries, you found some of these people who in the past were actually having reverence for the serpent, the snake, the forest, and all that. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, one of those overzealous Christians decided to kill the python, which caused an uproar because people thought that he was going to die, because no one ever did that. And then I also remember in some parts of Nigeria where the python is almost seen as a manifestation of an ancestor and all that. Yeah, you see all these animals and trees and all these that are said to be totems and the rest of them. Mm-hmm. But then with the coming of Christianity and then Islam, because I'm not really Islam out, these two religions, monotheistic, they started destroying things. You can even see, even in our present time, what happened in Mali and all that part, in which they were destroying some things, whether they were temples or even some books. What happened to Timbuktu? You found some of these fanatical Muslims who started burning some of the books of the of what people refer to as the oldest university in Africa and and one of the oldest in the world, at Timbuktu. Yeah, so certainly religion played a great part in that. And then there were forests before then, sacred forests, in which those were reserved, or they were seen as an abode of spiritual beings. People were afraid to go there, and so forth. Then, with the coming of the missionaries, and here comes the second part, commercialism, the commercial aspect of colonial enterprise, you found that all those big trees that were left alone and people were afraid and say, hey, they are the abode of the ancestors or spirits and all those. No, with colonialism and capitalism, these are things that should be cut down and the wood used for various things, export and the rest of them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so with that you see that the older system was indirectly being destroyed, because the older system, I'm looking at African traditional religion or all those practices, where trees were said to have spirits, where some mountains, because when they give up the heat or steam in the morning and all that, they said, okay, it's the abode of spirits and the rest of them. And then animals, yes. Some people thought animals also have souls. It's just that, yes, you can kill an animal. if you're going to eat it and share it with people, because traditional religion believed in the providence, God's providence. So, but you're not supposed to waste it. You're not doing that for commercial purposes or for capitalism. But all of a sudden, all these things are being destroyed. You kill elephants, not because you're going to share the meat and so forth for the community, just because you want the tusk. You're killing a whole elephant for the tusk. So all those kinds of things came with one way or the other.
Welcome back to WCBN FM Ann Arbor. We just had you listening to an interview about Christianity and its relationship to environmentalism in Africa. Christianity in North America and Christianity in Africa are really very different, and I think our listeners would be surprised to learn about how those differences play into the conception of the environment and the practice of environmentalism. Mugabe, do you want to touch on those differences a little bit?
Yeah, sure. One of the differences that I noticed on moving to the States is that Baptist churches are a lot more similar to Catholic churches in Uganda than to Catholic churches here. And the intensity of Baptist churches and the singing and dancing and the very like intense spirituality was a lot more similar and a lot more common to things back home. And I believe that Ugandan Catholicism and Ugandan Christianity and African Catholicism in general tends to be a lot more interpretive based and a lot more emphasis on your own interpretation of things, and syncretism intertwined with that. And syncretism is a term that means the pulling in of different aspects of religious practices across different religions. And so traditional African religions, for example, have a lot of veneration of ancestors and a lot of like a lot of praise and worship towards ancestors, which is intertwined in Ugandan Catholicism, despite that being like conventionally against traditional Catholic practices. And so there's a lot more emphasis on interpretation. For example, when I was younger, I remember asking my mother, how come whenever I did the sign of the cross in the name of the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit, how come we didn't recognize the mother? How come there was no the name of the Father, Mother, Son, and the Holy Spirit? And my mother looked down at me and she was like, I don't know why. Why don't you start doing it? And so I started doing it. And the fact that my mother was cool with me doing that, and she was like perfectly understandable and like accepting of that, that shows the differences in Ugandan and American Catholicism. Because I talked to some of my friends here and they were like, no, that's against like the tradition. That's against what the church says. You don't do that. And so I believe that African Christianity in general tends to be a lot more interpretation based.
Right. And I think part of this is that there's a compartmentalization of religion that you were talking about, how you sort of compartmentalize it into a Sunday or into one part of your life, and you don't let it seep out into your politics, into your practices. And so is there a sort of difference there? And how do you think that affects the way that people view the environment or the way they engage with the environment?
I think that affects the way people view the environment, and that with most monotheistic religions, like I remember my freshman year of college when I was here, I was discussing in a Western civilization class, we're discussing the Bible and the book of Genesis. And in the book of Genesis, it says something along the lines of God put man in charge of the rest of the world. And I always saw that as from a stewardship perspective, and the fact that like we are the only creatures capable of influencing the earth on such a large scale that we have to take care of it. But in my Western civilization class, I was talking to a lot of people and a lot of Christians who saw that from a perspective of man is in dominion of nature and man rules over nature. And so I believe with monotheism and with Christianity and Islam and the influences of the man being in charge of nature, that leads to a more degradatory view of the environment, and the environment being for human consumption instead of the environment being something that's on an equal footing that we should work with.
And you have this transporting of Western religions into Africa along with colonialism, right, which is an environmental disaster in a lot of senses. How do you think that those things sort of reinforce each other?
I definitely think they reinforce each other, because the missionaries were around in Africa a long time before the colonial forces were. And the missionaries were largely unsuccessful in gaining a lot of converts until the colonial forces came with their, like, basically power tactics. And then they were able to gain a lot of converts and a lot of people to went over to be Christians. And the same thing with the Muslims when they came down from the Arab world. They largely were able to gain converts and to gain power and influence through power tactics.
Great. So speaking of religion, we have a little song coming up here. Bad Religion by Frank Ocean. Mugabe, tell us a little bit about that song.
This song is talking about the demonization of religions and how religion can make you feel twisted up inside at times. And I believe it's a good segue into a greater discussion of how traditional African religions have been demonized over time and how a lot of people view them in a negative sense.
Frank Ocean, Bad Religion.
Taxi driver, be my shrink for the hour. Leave the meter running. It's rush hour, so take the streets if you want. Just outrun the demons, could you? He said, Allahu Akbar. I told him, don't curse me. Boy, boy, you need prayer. I guess it couldn't hurt me. If it brings me to my knees, it's a bad religion. Ooh, it's unrequited love. To me it's nothing but when my God in cyanide and much styrofoam. Driver, I swear I've got three lives balanced on my head like stick knives. I can't tell you the truth about my disguise. I can't trust no one. And you say, Allahu Akbar. I told him, don't curse me. But boy, you need prayer. I guess it couldn't hurt me. Yeah. If it brings me to my knees, it's a bad religion. Love to me is nothing but a one man cult in cyanide in my styrofoam cup. I can never make them love me, never make them love me. No, no, oh. It's a bad religion to be in love. Someone who could never love you. Oh, 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 only bad religion could have me feeling the way I do.
Could you speak a little bit on the relationship between spirituality and the environment in an African setting?
Well, I think, you know, like all of African life is very much engaged with, let's say, relations with invisible forces and places and natural objects and natural formations are also imbued with power of one kind and another. And you know, I think unless one, you know, again, approaches this relationally and trying to understand what the powers are and how they're understood and how they're related to and interacted with. So, you know, for instance, bodies of water in southern Africa, where I've worked mostly, bodies of water are thought to be very powerful places, and dangerous mm-hmm. places where there can be spiritual forces inherent in. There's one entity called Nkosi Yamanzi, mm-hmm. King of the Water, which takes the form of a tornado.
Okay.
And it's thought to be a giant snake
mm-hmm.
That lives in certain bodies of water
mm-hmm.
and which, if angered, can cause immense destruction. And again, you could say, well, these people believe, they have a belief in the snake and the lives in the water, but I see it more as, again, in the complex of relations. So in Soweto, 20 years ago now, one day these pamphlets appeared warning people that Nkosi Yamanzi, the King of the Waters, was angry.
Mm-hmm.
The children had been annoying him because they were throwing stones at ducks on this pond. The pond was in a shack settlement, an informal settlement near Johannesburg. And that pamphlet set off a whole series of processes, of meetings in the community, of investigations, and trying to figure out who sent it and why, and what, whether this was a real issue.
Mm-hmm,
so everybody, believed that there was this being, Nkosi Yamanzi, and that this, the threat, the warning, the prophecy was that unless the people, kind of repented, he would sweep up all the shacks and drop them on the border with Swaziland.
Uh-huh.
That, as I say, it set off this process of, kind of community soul searching. Are the children throwing stones at the ducks? Should we stop them? This waterhole, is there really Nkosi Yamanzi mm-hmm. living in this kind of stagnant pond in the corner of the place?
Mm-hmm.
Is this a true prophecy? Did this guy who wrote it really have the dream that he claimed to have had? He claimed to have had a dream in which his ancestors appeared and warned him about this. And others were skeptical. He was trying to set up a church and wanted to drum up business to get for his church and so on and so forth. Nobody doubted that this being existed and mm-hmm. that was capable of creating enormous destruction and that resided in the porthole. The idea of big snakes in bodies of water in lakes and so on is also very important in traditional healing
mm-hmm.
in southern Africa, where many healers have a story that they, in the process of becoming a healer, they were taken underwater into the lair of this snake
mm-hmm.
and kept there for 7 years is the sort of preferred time.
Okay.
And it's interesting when people tell that story, again looking at believing, it's an entirely believable narrative.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody says, you were underwater for 7 years, pull the other leg, it's got a bell on it. No, don't expect me to believe that nonsense. No, it's considered very plausible.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you doubt whether you actually were the one who did spend the 7 years under the lake,
mm-hmm.
but in principle it's possible, and that then becomes part of the imbuing of power in the healer.
Mm-hmm.
So the healer tells this story as a way of explaining where their power to heal has come from. It has come from this being in the lake.
That was Dr. Adam Ashforth being interviewed by our guest Mugabe. He was talking about how healers have this relationship to spiritual and mythical beings, and I think oftentimes environmentalists see themselves as healers, but maybe they miss that relationship to the mythical or to the spiritual.
Yeah, one of the things that I find interesting is that a lot of science and scientists tend to look down upon traditional healers and traditional like religious practices, despite the two not being too far apart, because science is based on theory and nothing in science can actually be proven. Like, science is just like a bunch of guesses, and some may be more, you know, like likely to happen than others. But I mean, like, at the end of the day, no one can prove the theory of gravity. It's just, it's very, very likely that it actually is true. And in a similar way, these traditional healers are mostly like guesswork and trying to figure out the world around them through the hypotheses and then testing them out.
Right. Science is really just the process of what can you disprove, right? Mm-hmm. It's finding what is not true, not what is true.
Exactly. And what Dr. Ashworth was discussing about more broadly was that he views things from a relational perspective. And so he's not looking at beliefs in terms of I believe in God, or I believe in the devil, or I believe in the God of the trees. He's looking at the relationships that people have with different people, with animals, and with the spiritual world. So the relationships people have with their ancestors, with their God, with their gods, or with anything that's spiritual. And so he's analyzing those relationships and not debating on whether or not those things exist. Because whether or not they exist, their relationship still exists.
Absolutely. Speaking of relationships, so what Dr. Ashford's talking about is very much a different vein than your typical monotheism or Christianity. What has your experience been taking these sort of two divergent ideas, which seem to have a lot of important things to say, and making them fit together in your life?
In my life, it's been difficult so far because I have been trying to gain more syncretism in my religious practices and trying to find out more and learn more about traditional African religions and try to apply them more so to my Christianity. But it's been difficult because a lot of traditional African practices have been demonized and labeled as satanic or labeled as like negative. Like, for example, my father passed in 2005, and during his funeral rites, I was supposed to be given a staff and a spear and a stool. And instead, I was given a Bible and a rosary. And I was grateful for the Bible and the rosary, but at the same time, I wanted the spear because it'd be cool. they weren't given to me because they said that the spear and the staff and those were satanic practices, and we no longer did them. And so what has happened over time with the colonialism and with missionaries coming in and preaching the word of God is... The way Christianity works is there's a God and there's a devil, and there's that antithesis and there's that relationship between them. And so in order for Christianity to be understood in an African setting, the missionaries had to relate it in the way that they understood. And so they had, in a lot of traditionally Ugandan religions, they have the God, they have the Katonda, they have the Supreme, but then they needed a devil, which was non-existent. And so they labeled a lot of things the devil, which were not the devil before, so that they could have that internal battle. Like, for example, the trickster is often labeled as the devil, despite the trickster not being the devil. Like Loki and Thor, Loki's not the devil, but he's labeled as the devil so that they could have that antithesis and that relationship between a positive and a negative. And so a lot of things were demonized and made negative, and that's carried on.
So it's safe to say there's still a very uneasy relationship between the two.
Exactly.
And how does that creation of that sort of like bipolar good and evil, How does the creation of that in the mind of Africans who are being colonized, how does that aid in the colonial project?
I think that aids in the colonial project because it leads to a self-hate. And like it's not like a deliberate self-hate, because it's not like, oh, I hate myself. But it's if you hate certain things about your culture and you hate certain things about yourself and you're looking at them as negative or as demonic, then that leads to like a sort of like split in your identity and a sort of looking up to people who are sure of themselves, which were the colonialists. And it also leads to a long-term altering, an altering of different cultural practices, a demonizing of certain cultural practices, and some of them stay the same.
Right, and some of these cultural practices that are demonized, like I'm thinking specifically of what you said about the staff being a demonic or evil. When I think of a staff, I see Moses in the Red Sea splitting the sea with a staff. Right, which is mm-hmm. sort of the opposite of demonic in monotheism. And so you can see how demonization is just sort of being cherry-picked.
Yeah. Exactly.
And so, but there is some sort of resistance to this religious colonialism that maybe is connected to environmental movements in Africa.
Definitely, definitely. You see a lot of independent African churches, such as the Mapeso movement in South Africa, who are largely a lot more syncretic most African Catholics, and they try to draw a lot more from traditional African religions and try to have a lot more of their religious practices, particularly in regards to the environment and through things like the totemic system, which is a system whereby every person, depending on what clan they belong to, has an animal associated with them as like a totem animal. And that totem animal, you're not supposed to kill or eat, or you're supposed to treat it like it's your brother. So you're supposed to deliberately go out of your way to conserve its habitat. So, for example, my people are the people of the frog. And so I'm supposed to be actively like seeking out to conserve frog habitats and things like that. And so through practices like that, those definitely have positive influences on the environment.
So we're going to bring in some music here from Fela Kuti. This is a fairly well known in the West now because there was a musical about him and his work recently. But just tell us a little bit about this specific song we're going to hear coming up.
Okay, this specific song is called Shuffering and Smiling by Fela. And it is about pastors in Nigeria and how the corruption of pastors and pastors have led to people basically valuing money more so than anything else due to the corruption inherent in a lot of pastors and how they preach more so for money than for the good of people.
Welcome back. This is WCBN FM Ann Arbor. It's Hot in Here. This is Sam Molnar, and we have just brought a special guest into the studio, Dr. Joseph Ansong. He's a postdoctoral researcher here at the Department of Earth and Environmental Sciences, currently looking at global ocean models to understand the fate of large-scale ocean waves, something that's hitting the bay right now. Joseph is originally from Ghana. His PhD is in applied mathematics, and he's currently training projects on the African continent and is planning to return to Ghana as a faculty member to help in building up STEM efforts in Ghana.
Joseph, thank you for joining us in the studio today. We appreciate having you here. And we just have a couple of questions here for you just to find out more about your interests in the African environment and African environmentalism in general. And possibly you could segue into relationships with religion if you are aware of any. So how did you come to be interested in oceans and the environment?
All right. Thank you very much for having me today. It's probably related to my background in applied mathematics. Mm-hmm. And so I've always been interested as an undergrad in my master's programs and my PhD in how do you apply mathematical models to real-life problems. And I think there's no better space bigger than the ocean and the atmosphere to apply these things. And so I've been interested in various aspects of the ocean and the atmosphere. But specifically, two main aspects of that caught my interest, and those are the waves in the oceans, as well as, dispersion of pollutants in the environment. And so these are the two main aspects that I'm interested in. The waves, specifically, I'm looking at something called internal waves. And so we have the surface waves that we are all familiar with, they break on the beaches and all that. But underneath the ocean, you have what is called internal waves, and those can break as well and mix the ocean. The mixing changes the stratification of the ocean, and that affects how currents move throughout the ocean. And you know that those currents carry important heat and nutrients around the globe. And so understanding the spatial distribution of those nutrients and heat is very important for the climate. And so that's why I'm basically interested in that aspect of the ocean. And I'm interested in how pollutants like oil spills are spread. Being able to predict where they spread, their direction, given environmental conditions, is very important for sort of alleviating the impact of these oil spills. And so that's my interest, basically, in the environment and the ocean.
That sounds like fascinating and very relevant work as well with the recent several oil spills that have occurred over time. It seems like certain ways of analyzing and making the cleanup processes quicker or better would be beneficial.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so what has your training and background been like in regards to the environment?
Right. So I did my undergrad in Ghana. Mm-hmm. I got a BSc in mathematics. Then from there, I went to the Netherlands to do a master's program in engineering mathematics. So that was really applied. You apply, mathematics to fluid dynamics problems, looking at how waves break on a beach. And so my project was mostly looking at if you generate a wave in the beach, it breaks in the ocean, it breaks on the beach. How can you design a beach such that you have minimal reflection? Because you are doing tests within a basin, a wave basin, and you don't want the reflected waves to interfere with your measurements. How best do you design a beach so that you have minimal reflection? That was my master's project. Then when I went to Canada to do my PhD, I got involved in laboratory tank experiments. So I was doing experiments in generating plumes and fountains. And the motivation was basically looking at how do plumes spread given different conditions in the atmosphere and the ocean. So if you have a two-layer fluid and you inject a plume into that, will those plumes and pollutants come back to the ground and affect lives, or they will just spread out somewhere where they will have minimal effects on biological and environmental you know, aspects of life. And so that's basically my training. My training was mostly applied mathematics, applying maths to fluid flows, fundamental fluid flow processes. So basically that's the background.
Okay.
Yeah.
So your training and your background sounds very much like the recent emphasis on the STEM Africa projects. And STEM, for those who don't know, is science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. And the fact that you're doing applied mathematics very much intertwines with engineering and with technology. And so how have you been involved with STEM Africa?
Yeah, so one of the goals of the STEM Africa committee is to try and nurture, you know, upcoming scientists in the African continent. Sort of try to get a very strong collaboration between scientists in Africa and scientists in the U.S., especially in Michigan here. And so, one of their projects is so-called a UMAPS program, where they bring in scientists from universities in Africa to stay here in Michigan for a couple of months, and then they get matched with a scientist right here, and by so doing, you know, they get upgraded and they have time to write their papers and all that. And last, actually, in March and April, I was selected by the committee to visit one of the universities in Ghana. The focus was to form collaborations with faculty in the universities, as well as teach a course in computational fluid dynamics. And so I got to go back to Ghana and to interact with some of the faculty there, and also teach students. Some of the students were interested in modeling oil spills, mm-hmm. because there's oil now in Ghana. And so people are concerned that with what is happening in Nigeria, if there's a spill in Ghana, I mean, it could be catastrophic for the fisheries and marine environment, mm-hmm. and people living along the coast. And so there are people who are really interested in this problem, and I'm very interested as well. So I got to teach a student who was actually beginning to go into this line of research. And so I helped him to set up a model which you can use to sort of simulate this type of scenarios. So I've been involved with the STEM for since I've been here in Michigan. And I went back in Ghana again with my advisor here, Brian, Professor Brian Abik. It's a STEM-related visit to Ghana, but it's not directly connected to the STEM committee. Brian has a grant that will help him to set up something like a summer school, where he will go from U.S., he will send scientists from U.S. here back to Ghana to the universities to teach short courses in oceanography, physical oceanography, chemical oceanography, and to help students in the physical sciences to get interested in this type of area of research. And so these have been some of my involvement in the STEM African Committee.
Okay. Now, your work with STEM Africa, you mentioned the potential hazards for oil spills in Ghana. You mentioned educational challenges as well. Can you think of any other environmental or educational challenges facing Ghana in particular and West mm-hmm. Africa in general?
Right.
And how they could address those?
Right. So there are many challenges, very many challenges. One that comes to mind right now is, student-people ratio or teacher-student ratio is really, really high. And so professors in African universities and Ghana in particular, they teach large classes of students, and so they don't have time for research. And so sometimes students write their reports and their theses, and they don't get reviewed for months and sometimes years. They don't get to publish their results. And so there are so many challenges, logistical, academic challenges, and various challenges that are facing the institutions. There's overcrowding in most of the schools. I was talking with one of my colleagues who just came back from Ghana, and he was saying that this problem still persists, where you have sometimes students hanging on windows to listen to lectures because it's just too full.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a lot of challenges. There are no research materials. Those are some of the challenges that we face. On the environmental aspect, there are still challenges as well. There is pollution. You are probably familiar with the Agbogbloshie problem mm-hmm. of pollution that is going on. So there are so many challenges that needs to be addressed. Well, people have ideas on different ways to to tackle those problems.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So as Joseph highlighted, Africa faces a multitude of environmental problems, and African environmentalism has a lot of issues that we have to construct positive ways of facing. And the gist of this radio show and the reason that I interviewed Joseph and the reason that I talked about religion for the first half of it is I was looking at different ways to address African environmentalism and African environmental challenges. And the first way that I proposed was through religion and through a greater syncretism of religion and through a greater valuation and awareness of environmental issues. And a second way through what Joseph is proposing is through science and through scientific approaches at environmental challenges. And so we're just looking at different approaches, and no one approach can solve everything, and we'll inevitably need a combination of all the different approaches. But we're just looking at science and religion as two possible ways of facing African environmental challenges. And I'd like to preclude this by saying that by the very term African environmental challenges in Africa, that is a huge generalization as it is, because the African continent has a multitude, over 50 different, 54, 55, North mm-hmm. Sudan, different countries, 56 actually, different countries. And within those countries are several different ethnic groups, and each ethnic group usually has its own cultural practices and religions and things like that. For example, my mother's people, they call the religious practice Nyabinje, which means the ones who have all. And that is one of the few religious practices that I actually know a name of, because a lot of these names have been lost over time. And so this, a lot of the things that have been discussing in this show have been large generalizations. But the problem with the African continent is you tend to have to make these generalizations because of a lack of material and a lack of research and a lack of studies being done.
Right. And I think, you know, in this show, we've sort of seen some of how these connections between religion and spirituality and between research and science can sort of manifest themselves in the ways that we look at what's important. Specifically, I'm thinking about, you know, we heard this really important mythology about the monster in the ocean, right? The mythical being in the ocean. And then we also heard from a scientific perspective how the ocean is really powerful and has, you know, surface waves that we can see, and then also has sort of energy, waves, energy beneath the surface that are also very powerful, but maybe are more difficult to discern. And I think, you know, as you recognize these connections, we can really build up towards an environmental ethic. Do you want to maybe talk about, Joseph, a little bit more about, you know, why the ocean is such an attractive thing to study? And maybe, you know, what are some of the implications of your research for conservation in Ghana?
Right. So those waves you just talked about, internal waves, as I probably mentioned, they have very large amplitudes compared to their surface counterparts, which means they are more susceptible to breaking and mixing. And those mixings need to be captured in something like climate models. And so if you don't have very good maps for those spatial maps of mixing that is going on in the ocean, you predict something that is completely wrong. And so you need to get what is happening in the ocean right. Put in another way, you can say that, you know, you can use the ocean as a boundary condition for running global climate models. And so getting a good condition for what is happening in the ocean helps you very much to predict what is going to happen in terms of the climate. And so the ocean plays a very important role. And right now I'm looking at global ocean models and how these waves spread throughout the ocean. And so in terms of Ghana, I'll be looking at using regional models. So to do similar studies of oil spill as well as how the waves break in the ocean. And that is very important in predicting where pollutants, oil spills will spread to once you have an accident happening. Hopefully this doesn't happen, but we know that these things do happen once in a while. And so these studies and my experience here in Michigan will actually help in sort of informing policy in how to handle these issues once you have an accident of an oil spill, let's say.
Well, hopefully with those oil spills and with the waves, you'll see that eventually they just sort of fade away. And that brings us to our next musical number that's coming up. Everything Fades. And who's this by, Mugabe?
This is by a singer-songwriter producer out of Detroit, actually, called Jameson.
Everything Fades. Welcome back. This is WCBN FM Ann Arbor. It's hot in here. We're getting to the end of our show, and we're going to end on a light note, as we often try to. The ocean is sometimes, some people think it's scary, some people think it's fascinating, some people think both. Mugabe, we want to know a little more about sort of the ocean as a whole thing.
So my question for you, Doctor, would be of all the things that you've learned about the ocean, what is the most amazing thing? What can I go tell people that I've learned from you today?
Right. So most people know about the ocean in terms of the waves and the beaches. But what most people don't know is that we have a waves climate within the ocean. Just as you have waves on the surface of the ocean, you have waves as well beneath the ocean, and they are very strong and powerful. And the Navy is very interested in these oceans that are within the ocean, because they have huge amplitudes. And so if you have something like a submarine that is caught in one of these waves, it can toss it up and down. So at each point in time, they want to know whether these huge waves are somewhere along in the ocean. And so what you could probably tell some of your friends is that you have waves within the ocean as well as waves on the surface of the ocean.
Oh, man, that's remarkable. And is there a rough... I guess, rule of thumb on the amplitude of these waves in meters? Are they 5 meters or 100 meters?
Yes, they can be as large as 100 meters, 200 meters.
Wow.
So they can be very huge.
That is really remarkable.
Yes.
Well, friends, goodbyes are sad, but fear not. It's Hot in Here. We'll be back in 2 weeks from today on WCBN FM Ann Arbor 88.3. In the meantime, we'll leave you with an ode that is a testament to the fusion of Ugandan modernity with traditional culture. Here is Samite's modern twist on the traditional Baganda song Muzinge, about a mythical quest to see a peacock, a sign of good fortune. Hopefully, we will likewise be able to find a whole flock of peacocks. towards the issue of engendering environmentalism. I want to give a special thank you to our special guests in the studio today, Mugabe, Joseph, Jason. Thank you so much for being here with us. This is Sam Molnar, WCBN-FM Ann Arbor. It's hot in here.
Mugenda wa Mama tondeka Mukuro genda wa Mukuru tondeka Mugongo guruma Mavivi galuma Amaso galuma Lubuto luluma Inyingo ziruma Mama tondeka Mukuru tondeka Mama tondeka Mukuru tondeka.